It's a good song, isn't it? Hey, let's take our Bibles and turn to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25. Yes, Matthew chapter 25, verse 14. Boy, it's good to see you. Did anybody take a nap? Just the main usher in the back. He took a nap. Well, I'm glad. We didn't have enough time to take a nap, did we? But I want to thank the pastor and his wife for having me over. She is a great cook, and he's okay at what he does. No, I'm kidding. I'm just teasing. But it's sure good to see someone that when you were the youth pastor, they were in your youth group years ago, and now pastoring. And matter of fact, we have numbers of people, another Kevin and I think your brother, and there were some others. And then when I went to First Bible Baptist Church, there was numbers of people that were pastoring now today, missionaries around the country, so around the world. Hey, it's good to see you. The pastor says you usually start at 1:30 in the afternoon. You're usually done around 4:15, so that'll be good. I'm kidding. Don't worry. Okay, so if you haven't signed up to see me, I'd love to see you. I'm giving away $300 bills for everyone that comes. No, I'm not. But you'll have more than $100 if you come to see me, I think, by learning some of the things we're going to talk about. So let's take this piece of paper. Does anyone want one that doesn't have one? Okay, we've got one up here. Everybody can have one if you want one. But again, keep in mind those three questions. What does it say? What does it mean? What am I supposed to do with it? That's to help us when we're looking at Bible studies to keep you focused. And so we're going to end up filling out all these pages, okay? But before we do that, I just want to have a short little Bible study with you. Matthew chapter 25 and verse 14. Now, of course, this is the story about the stewardship. And so what does it say? What does it mean? So verse 14, for the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country. So I'm going to test you for a little bit since it's just kind of us. Can we have some fun tonight? Today? Is that okay? Just a little bit of fun? All right, so Pastor, you can answer these. You know the answer, but Jesus is going to tell a story, and he's telling a story about somebody that is traveling into a far country. Now, he's going to use this story to teach biblical principles, but who's the man you think he's referring to that traveled from a far country? Who's he referring to? Who do you know of that traveled from a far away place to another place, and he called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods? Who do you think he's referring to?
Jesus Christ.
All right. Yes. You good? You're just raising his hand. Okay, so he's referring to himself. He's referring to God came from heaven, and he went to earth, the far country. So he's referring to himself, that he came from a faraway place, heaven, and he came to a far place called earth, and he called his servants. So who are the servants he called in this story? Who do you think he's referring to, the servants he called?
Us.
Okay, so let me read this passage, get you a little bit more engaged. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And to one he gave 5 talents, and to another 2, and to another 1, and to every man according to his several ability, and he straightway took his journey. Where did he go? Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded five the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise, he also that had received 2 talents, he also gained the other 2. But he that received the 1 went and digged it in the earth and hid his Lord's money. Okay, so now are you with me? So he's telling a story about someone that came from a far land. It's him. He came to earth and he called his servants. So let's do this again. Who are the servants that the Lord called? All of us. So if you want to take notes or something on the back, the servants is us. So how many of those that got saved are his servants? All of us, okay? All right, so I'm kind of helping you here. So he called all of us to be his servants, and then he delivered unto us his goods. What are some of the goods that he gave us, servants, Christians, followers, born-again children of God? What did he give us when he saved us besides mercy, forgiveness, love, grace, salvation, eternal life, those types of things? Other than that, what are some things he gave you to use to serve him with. He gave every one of us. Okay, good. Spiritual gifts. What are some of the spiritual gifts for today do we have that we Christians can use in his service? What are some of the spiritual gifts today that we can use in his service? Teaching. Okay, what else? Teaching?
Helps.
A gift of helps. A gift of faith, ministry, administration. Pardon me? The gift of giving. Okay, so where are we picking these things up at? Where are they in the Bible? Well, they're found in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Don't turn there because of time. And also, the spiritual gifts that God gave full-time Christian workers, what we'd call them, pastors, teachers, and evangelists, is found in Ephesians chapter 4. All right, so how many of you have received a spiritual gift of some type when you got saved? All of you, right? All right, so have some fun here. Did the pastor? What were some of the spiritual gifts that God gave the pastor?
Preaching,
teaching, maybe admonishing, leading. All right. So, what happens if the pastor on Saturday night told his wife, "You know what, honey? I'm just not feeling it. I just don't think I'll go to church tomorrow. Just tell him I don't feel good and I just don't want to go to church." Do you think that would that have any effect on the church? It would? So do you think it has any effect on the church when any other church servant decides they're not going to use their spiritual gifts or ability? It does, doesn't it? This is a little bit of a trick question. As far as God is concerned, not you and I, but as far as God is concerned, is the pastor's spiritual gifts any more important as far as God is concerned to the wholeness of the church any more than the spiritual gifts that God has given you? Not any more important. They're all important, right? And so what happens if I don't use the spiritual gifts that God has given me? Does it affect the church? Yeah. So you have a body. I have a body. It's made up of many members. I got a nose, which is quite big, and ears and eyes and mouth and tongue and fingers and hands and toes. All right. So I have to tell you this. Please forgive me, but I'm telling you this for a reason. So my wife and I moved not too long ago from down by a lake where we had nice stuff and boat and swimming pool things. And so when we moved down there, it had a shed. Well, my grandfather was a farmer and I love outdoors. And so I went when we first moved there and I opened up the roll-up aluminum shed door. Have you seen these? They're aluminum doors, like a garage door. It's made out of aluminum. And so he rolls up and then roll back down. And so I was like a kid playing with it. And then I put my hand on the track and pulled it down. Well, lo and behold, it cut my thumb. And so I looked at it and about passed out. It was really big cut. It was about that big. Can you see a scar? You look really good. Anyway, so I grabbed a hold of my thumb and ran home to my mom, to my wife. And I had a little bit of blood because my wife doesn't have the gift of mercy. And she started laughing at me. And she said, I said, "Why are you laughing?" She said, "Because you're the biggest pansy I've ever seen in my life. Let me see it." And so I showed it to her, and she said, "Well, come on in the house. I'll clean it up." I said, "What are you going to do?" And so she's leading me to the water faucet, and she turns on the water faucet, and she said, "Now give me your thumb. We're going to put it underneath the water." "No, it hurts." She said, "Oh, you big baby, give me your thumb." And so she cleaned it out, and she looked at it, and I said, "I think I'm going to pass out." And she said, she starts laughing, and she said, "Let's go to the doctor. You might need a stitch or two." So we went to the doctor, and I thought, okay, I'm not kidding you. I'm the biggest weenie in the world. I can't stand pain. And so I laid down because I didn't want to pass out sitting up while she sewed up my thumb. And so I laid there and we're talking. I thought she's putting 17, 18 stitches in. And I said, "How many did you put in?" She said, "Well, two. I'll put one more in and make you feel better. I got three in there." And she said, "Now look, I want you to go home and I want you to stick this up in the air when you're in the shower. You can't get this wet for a week." Have you all ever taken a shower with one hand? And this little thumb of mine, I'm going to let... So I had to hold the thumb up in the air and the soap, and it was a mess. It was awful. And then I went to bed, and have you ever had a cut and you went to bed and you could feel a pulse beating in your foot? And I said, "Honey, I think I'm going to pass out." And of course, we're in bed and she starts laughing. And she said, "Could you have a little pulse in your feet?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, close your eyes. You'll go to sleep and you'll be better in the morning." So my point to this is, it was just a little tiny cut. And you may only be one, but you're very, very important to this church. Every single one of you are crucially important to the body of Christ, this church. And so this lesson here, God is teaching us that whether he gave you five talents, two talents, or one talent, every single one of you have been given talents. So one of those talents is spiritual gift. Another one is time. And I submitted to you that time, I want you to leave tonight trying to burn this in your mind. Time is one of the most important, precious things you have. Amen. And we waste a lot of it. So let's read on down. Where are we now? He took his journey. In verse 15b, where did he go? He came, he saved, he got servants, he gave him spiritual gifts. And 15 says, and he took his journey. Well, where did he go? Well, he went back to heaven, right? That's where Jesus is now. Then he that had received five talents went and traded the same and made them five talents more. Likewise also that received two, and he that gained the other two. But he that had received the one went and digged it in the earth and hid his Lord's money. And we don't have time to go into depth here, but why do you think the servant hid his Lord's money? What on down in the scriptures of verse 25 does it say is the reason he hid his Lord's money? Fear. Fear. Why didn't he use the talent that God gave him? Fear. I've been around a long time. You know why most Christians don't use what God has given them? Fear. Do you know why we don't tithe if we don't tithe? Fear. Do you know why we don't witness if we don't witness? Fear. Do you know why we don't use the talent that God has given us like we should? Fear. So when your faith in God is greater than your fear, then your faith will move you. Your fear will freeze you. Some of you have done something as a Christian in the past that you regret, you shouldn't have done, or you were part of. And some of us have allowed that thing in the past to make it so we don't progress any more than we have in the future. But the windshield is larger than the rearview mirror. Forgetting those things which are behind, pressing on to those things which are before, I'm going to use the talent and the time and the treasure that God has given me the rest of my life and not let my mistakes or someone else's mistake that hindered me keep me from doing what I know the Lord wants me to do. Why is that important? Because watch this. Verse 19. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh. How many of you are excited about Jesus coming again? Aren't you excited about Jesus coming again? I'm excited. He's coming again. Get us out of this mess. But what is the very first thing he's going to do when he comes back? What's the rest of that verse say? He's going to reckoneth with them. Who's the them he's referring to? Us. Now, praise be unto God that his blood has covered our sin, and our sin, our mistakes, our failures are behind his back, and he can remember them no more. So when he comes back and he reckons with us, he's not going to reckon with our sins because that has already been reckoned with on the cross. Then what is he going to reckon us with? And the answer is, he's going to reckon us with, what did you do with all the time I gave you? What did you do with all the money I gave you? What did you do with all the talent I gave you? Where did you invest it? What good is it? Did you invest it for eternity or waste it? And so I'm excited about the Lord's coming back, but the very first thing he's going to do, it won't be me and my wife up here together in front of Jesus and Jesus saying, now tell me what you did with this time. Here's a screen and see all the time you sat in front of TV and wasted time or wasted this. I'm not going to be able to say, well, I've spent, look at all this, what she, or he, well, those kids, no, it's just going to be you. You're not going to be accountable for your sin. Your sin's forgiven, but we are going to be accountable for what we did with our time, with our money and our talent and our treasure. And so the next few minutes, I want to delve into how to become more profitable for the kingdom of heaven, how to be more profitable for God, and how to be more profitable for your family, okay? So with that in mind, take this piece of paper, and we're going to get into this. And there's different age groups here, young people, middle age, and older people. So I have the task in the next few minutes to go over this information for all those categories. So some of the things I'm going to talk about may not hit specifically for your age group, but I'll get there. So hang with me and stay with me. And I promise you, you'll get a lot out of this. Okay, so let's go up to number one, God's three ways to have money. Point number one, the wisdom of God. So just write down the wisdom of God. I'm not going to turn there because of time, but in 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 3, I referred to it earlier today. Solomon was on the mountaintop looking over Israel and begging God for wisdom. So God came to him and God said, what do you want, Solomon? Now, Solomon means the tenth. Solomon means the beloved of the Lord. Your name means something. Most of your names mean something. I refresh my wife's memory all the time about my name. Do you know what my name, Stephen, means? The crown one, the prince. I come home and she says, oh, there's the man of God. Okay, now come on in, honey. I got a lot of things for you to do here. I miss you. I figured all these things. And so you're the prince. So anyways, no, it's not quite like that, but teasing a little bit. Not much. So I come home and I'm the prince. But you know, the Solomon means the beloved of the Lord. He was the 10th son of David. So who usually is the king after which son is usually the king after the king passes away? The oldest. Solomon's the 10th. The 10th son. And who is Solomon's mama? So can God use you if God can use Solomon? You know what David did with Bathsheba? You know the story. That's why I said a few minutes ago, even though I'm going to say a lot and a lot of things you may have heard before, but I hope and pray that you will let God use some of the things I say to help you, because some of the reasons that you are no further along in your Christian life, in the victorious in your Christian life, is because you've allowed your past to paralyze you. Forget the past. Forgetting those things which are behind, pressing on those things which are before. So one of the ways to have more money, and I just want to camp here for just a second, I submit unto you, you don't need more money. You don't need more money. You need more wisdom, how to handle and manage your money. So we ask for more money, but the truth is, God doesn't give us more money until we know how to handle the money that he has given us. Little as much when God is in it, right? So even if you don't feel like you have very much money, the money you do have, God wants to use that amount to teach you because he loves you. Did God give the guy that he gave five talents to, did God love him more than he loved the guy that he gave the two talents to? Did he? No. Just because someone in the church may have more money than other people, does that mean God loves him more? No. Why did God give some people more than others? What does it say in that verse? 15. According to the several ability. According to your ability. Most people have what they deserve and manage. So when I deserve more or can manage more, God will give me more because that means he knows he can trust me more with more, that I'm not going to blow it. So Solomon asked God, God, give me wisdom. And God came to Solomon and said, I'm not only going to give you wisdom because you didn't ask for yourself. So let me ask you this question. Why do you want more money or do you think you need more money? If it's just for yourself, that's a selfish reason, may not be the reason that God will give you it. But Solomon asked for wisdom, and God said, because you didn't ask for yourself, I'm going to give you riches. So Lord, help me to have wisdom. And if you give me wisdom, I'll be better steward of what you've given me. And Lord willing, you'll give me more to manage. Point number two, the Word of God. Word of God, I'll be quick on this. One of the things that we find is that according to a lot of what the Sunday School worship service is about today, I honestly, you say, now you preach it, you're a preacher, you go around preaching this, but do you really believe it? Yes. I literally believe the more I obey God's word and read it and memorize it, and study it, and know it, and love it, the more he will bless me. I know you all don't know me, but I have a lot of stuff. God has richly blessed me. But you know the most precious thing I have is this. I've got nice stuff I could tell you about. Put it all together and burn it in comparison to this. So if I hide myself in this book and just read it more, love it more, obey it more, God will bless me, and he has. So I'm saying that to give him the glory. All right? So point number three, go to work, the work of God. What's God's ways of me having money? Number one, asking for the wisdom of God. Number two, adhering and obeying, loving and living the word of God. And point number three, go to work. Now, as lame as that sounds, let me ask you a question. This is going to be very practical in the next few minutes as we go through this. But how many hours are in a day? How many hours do they say we're supposed to sleep, maybe? How many?
Eight.
Eight, okay. So eight from 24 leaves. All right, so how many hours does the average person supposedly go to work?
Eight.
So we sleep 8 hours, we work 8 hours, and that leaves 8 hours. So if we're not in bed sleeping for 8 hours, and if we're not working for 8 hours, what in the world are we doing for another 8 hours every single day? So if you're here today and you say, well, it'd be really nice if I could have more money. Well, one of the things you might consider is go to work more. Start your own business. I have a daughter that cleans houses. Whenever she feels like cleaning a house, she picks up $185 for 2 hours of cleaning a house. I was gone one day, two weeks, and it was my turn to clean the windows, because I clean the windows, I'm the man. And so it was fall, it's time to clean the windows, and I couldn't get back to clean the windows when I was supposed to, so my wife called me, she said, can I get someone to clean the windows? I said, well, yes, I don't want you up there on the ladder. We had 24 windows then. And she said, okay. And so she got someone to clean the windows, and I came home, and when I got home, and we looked around, I said, boy, these windows are clean. You got someone to clean them? Yeah, I did. Well, how long did it take him to clean 24 windows? 3 hours. Oh, not that it matters, but how much did that cost? $185. $185 to clean windows for 3 hours? Pete's sake. He made over $60 an hour. I think I'm going to become a window cleaner. My point is, there's all kinds of ways for you to make money. So if you need more money, one of the things you ought to do is go to work. If you're not working more than 8 hours, you're sleeping 8 hours, you work 8 hours, what are you doing 8 hours a day? All right, let's take 8 hours and spend it with the family, mow the grass, clean the house, have devotions, eat food. There's another 4 hours. What are you doing? In other words, time is one of the most precious things you have. So many Christians I see waste so much time. You ought to be out thinking about how I could serve the Lord during those hours. Anyway, let me move on. That's just the introduction, the wisdom of God, the word of God, and the work of God. Now let's get into the nitty-gritty of the three financial stages of the steward's life. This is what's going to be practical. So I'm going to give you Roman numeral 1, Roman numeral 2, and Roman numeral 3. Just put the heading down. Ready? Here we go. Roman numeral 1, the accumulation phase. The accumulation phase. This is, of course, while you're working. Roman numeral 2, the preservation phase. This is when you're retired. And Roman numeral 3, the distribution phase. So all of you are in one of these phases. You're either accumulating money in your working career, or you're close to retirement, or you have been retired for a while and you only have another 10 or 20 years to live. So you need to get ready for the distribution phase, okay? So the accumulation phase, here we go. Number one, what's the first thing I need to do to accumulate money? By the way, the purpose of money is not to spend. I don't go to work so I can have money so I can spend it. America does that. The reason they go to work is so they can spend money. God doesn't give us money so we can just spend it. Proverbs 23:5, money is like a bird with wings that flies away. We got that credit card, that debit card. And the money just flies out. So God didn't give us strength and wisdom so we can make money so we can spend it. That's a premise we need to get a hold of. So what's the first thing I need to do to have more money? Give unto the Lord the first fruits. Proverbs 3:9, honor the Lord with the first fruits of thy substance. If I make $1,000 a month, I need to give how much? 100 at least. And that leaves 900 for me to pay my bills. Can God take $900 and multiply it and make it more than the $100 that I gave away or gave to the Lord? And the answer is yes. Can God take less and make it more? Yes. I need to be obedient. So the first step of having more money, Christians, is simply start tithing. If you're not tithing, step out by faith. Don't let fear keep you from... Why didn't he give? Fear. Why didn't he invest what God gave him? Fear. Why don't you tithe? Fear. Don't do that. Trust God. God will provide. I have never heard any Christian, I've spoken to thousands and thousands and thousands of people, I've never heard any Christian say, I started tithing and I had less money than I had before. All the Christians I've ever talked to that tithe had more money than they had before they tithe. Because they tithe. God wants us to tithe. B, set a budget. Oh, that sounds good. Set a budget. That's real easy. Don't raise your hand. Don't respond, but don't respond. But how many of you have a budget? Don't respond to that question. You need to have some kind of a budget. So what's the first line item on your budget you should have? Tithe. Very good. So take a T. Here's my income this month. Here's my outgo this month. What's my first outgo this month? Tithe. What's my second outgo this month? It needs to be housing. Your house, rent, you're renting, or you're buying a house or mortgage. Your mortgage should not be any more than 28 to 30% of your monthly income. So if I make $4,000 a month and I have a mortgage, and my mortgage should not be any more than 30% of $4,000, then how much at the maximum should I be spending on my mortgage? What's 3 times 4? So $4,000 income, my mortgage is 30%. How much of $4,000 is a mortgage? 30%, 3 times 4 is $1,200. So if you have $4,000 income, your mortgage shouldn't be any more than $1,200. If you make whatever you make, make sure that your mortgage is under 30%. Now, if you're renting an apartment, your mortgage needs to be under 30% of your monthly income. Here is a fantastic thing for you to write down under the word budget. Ready? Write it down somewhere else. It's a sentence. It's a short sentence. Ready? Whatever you track, you can control it, and whatever you do not track, you do not control. Whatever you track, you control it. And whatever you don't track, you don't control. The reason why a budget is crucially important is because if you have a budget, you can stick to it and track your money. And if you don't have a budget, you don't track your money, you just spend it. So this goes for calories. This goes for time. It goes for money. It goes for everything in your life. If I track my budget, I know that I'm only going to spend this amount of money on the house, this much tithe, this much on my bills. And so at the end of the month, if I don't have enough money, I'm not going to go put anything on a credit card because it doesn't fit my budget. So the first thing, young people, you need to tithe 10% and you need to save 10%. Young people, you need to save 10%. You need to tithe 10%. So whatever you track, you control, and whatever you don't track, you don't control. So I'm going to give you one other thing that you need to put in your budget and control it. Now, I didn't come here because I asked for anything from the pastor or do I expect anything. So I'm here for you. So don't be mad at me. I love you. I'm telling you right now, the greatest place that you are wasting money is food. Drink and food. Well, I don't drink, I don't drink booze either, but if I'm not careful, I will spend $2.69 at a fast food place if I want a Pepsi or whatever, And if I'm not careful, I go to the grocery store, I go home, my wife says, can you go to the grocery store? Uh-huh, I love to go to the grocery store. What do you want me to get? The same thing? Yes, I need you to get eggs, milk, and bread, and the dog needs some bones. So I see eggs, milk, and bread, and dog bones. So I come back with eggs, milk, and bread, and dog bones, and ice cream, potato chips, and cakes, and I love cookies. And you know, they have these really delicious potato chips. And so I come out, and so sometimes I have this drink, it's called Vita Drink from Kirkland, that I go to Costco. Honey, we need to go to Costco so I can get my vitamin drink, which is 30 drinks for like $12. We're going to save money by going to Costco. By the time I walk out of Costco, it's $235. Anybody ever have any of this experience? And calories is the same thing. I'm heavier now than I've ever been in my life. I travel a lot, and I don't smoke or drink with those that do, but I sure like ice cream. And so I go to an ice cream store, and I know that when I get home, I'm going to have a question from my wife, and that is, did you have any ice cream? Yes. Well, where did you go? Well, whatever I tell her, Brewster's, Dairy Queen, wherever. And she said, what'd you get? Hot Fudge Sundae. Oh, my goodness, that's 1,387 calories. Well, I'll show you. I'm going to go get on the treadmill. And so I go get on the treadmill, and I'm killing it. And I look down after 10 minutes on the treadmill, and I burnt 42 calories. But if I just track it, I won't spend as much. You can incrementally slow down. One of the ways you can have more money is incrementally just cut back a little bit. So one of the greatest things that we can do to help ourselves is look at our food. My mama, many years ago, as your mother did, many of you, on a Saturday, she'd get a shopping list, and she would write down what we're going to have to eat for breakfast on Monday morning, lunch on Monday, dinner Monday, Tuesday. And then she'd go and buy that stuff, and that's all she would buy. And I made it through childhood okay. So I'm telling you, don't get caught up in all the expenses of food. Be careful. I counsel people many times, and I see people spending $590 a month on eating out alone. $960 a month eating out alone. So anyway, consider what it saved. May the Lord give you wisdom in all things. Set up a budget. I can help you with that. C, go to work. We talked about that a little bit. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 2. Solomon talks about having seven sources of income. I did not know this, but when I got educated in what I'm doing on the secular side, I found out that the average person that has wealth has seven sources of income. I just found out a year ago that Solomon said in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 2, a good source of income is seven sources. Social Security, required minimum distribution on an IRA, rent. In other words, when you get older, you need to have more sources of income rather than just Social Security. Go to work if you need to go to work. D, get out of debt. This is so important. Get out of debt. That's easy for me to stand up here and say, isn't it? Get out of debt. Please write this down. Do you have a mortgage? Those of you that have a mortgage, please write this down. Call the mortgage lender tomorrow and ask them if you can cut your mortgage in half and pay the same amount each month, but half of it on the 1st and half of it on the 15th. How many of you have ever heard this before, what I'm about to share with you? Okay, good. So why would that help if I paid half of my mortgage on the 1st and half of it on the 15th? And the answer is because there's something called amortization daily. That's a fancy word that simply means that when you pay your mortgage on the 1st, let's say your mortgage is $1,000 on the 1st of the month, and you're not going to pay the mortgage till the next 1st of the month. That makes sense. What you don't know is that the way the banks have it set up is that there's something called compound interest, and then compound interest from, let's call it 5% on $1,000, means the next day you owe $1,005. Well, the next day after that, you owe 5% of 105%. And it's like a snowball going downhill, but this is going up every day. Compound interest is growing on the previous day's amount, and it's getting bigger and bigger. How many of you know the difference between compound interest and simple interest? Simple interest is 5% of 100 is how much? $5, right? Compound interest of 5% is on compounding on the previous day's amount, which 5% of 115 is more than 5% of 100. So compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. The reason that many of you have a credit card and it's hard to get out of debt is because they set up the payment of the credit card so you almost are never going to get out of debt. You need to get out of debt. If you have to go to work and get an extra job to go out of debt, then that's what you need to do. But I also believe David Ramsey does have something going. So let's say I had four fingers and I had four credit cards. All the credit cards have different balances. They all have different interest rates. See how my fingers are different lengths? So whatever credit card has the smallest balance on it, I'm going to incrementally cut back on eating out, and I'm going to take that money plus all the money that I can come up with at the end of the month and put it on one credit card that has the smallest balance. Pretty soon before I know it, I only have three credit cards. Then I'm going to do the same thing. Whichever one has the smallest balance, forget about the interest rate. Well, this one has a bigger interest rate than that one has a small. Forget about the interest rate. Take you forever. Do it this way. You'll get out of debt quicker by putting as much money as you can on the smallest balance, credit card. Then you take your money and you save it and you invest it. We'll talk about that later. And you take the interest that you're earning and you use it to be your own bank. If you want to Google this, if you're young people, it'd be good to Google this if you're a young person. It's called bank on yourself. It's using your own money to be your bank. So when you want to buy a refrigerator or a car, or you got to fix a roof that costs $15,000, you don't have to put it on a credit card or borrow money. You take money off of your money, that's your savings, that you're using to bank on yourself, and you borrow money off of your own self-bank. One of the biggest problems in America is they invented something called a debit card. Do any of you have one? So the debit card is really nice, because when I go put gas in my car and I have a minute, I can go into the convenience store. The convenience stores are making millions and billions of dollars by us going into the convenience store and buying a Coke or candy or whatever we buy in there, more than they are on the gasoline we're buying. And we just buy the stuff. This is an American cultural problem. So one of the worst things for you to do is put stuff on a credit card or use your debit card all the time, because you just swipe it if you don't budget it. So get out of debt as soon as you can. Call the mortgage company tomorrow and ask if you can split your payment. If you split your payment in half, you will get out of debt 6 years quicker. You will pay your mortgage off by paying exactly the same amount of money 6 years quicker on a 30-year mortgage by just splitting it. Now, if you can add one more payment a year and pay the payment at the end of the year, if I can come up with one more mortgage payment paid at the end of the year and pay half of my mortgage payment each month, I will get out of my mortgage nine years quicker just by paying one more payment a year and paying the same monthly payment twice in a month. You'll get out of your mortgage 9 years quicker. I'm just throwing ideas out there, okay? I'm trying to help you. Get out of debt as soon as you can. You know the scriptures say, owe no man anything. We know the scriptures, Proverbs 22:7. The borrower is a servant of the lender. So quit borrowing money and start making your money grow for you. Earn interest on your money so you can live on your interest and not borrow it. It's easy to say that in a service like this. Come and let me talk to you. We can get down more into the nitty-gritty of it. D, get out of debt. E, protect what you have with insurance. Now, just keep this in mind, these little tidbits I'm giving you. Every year you need to call your homeowner's insurance, car insurance, and your health insurance company and talk to an independent agent to see if they can give you a better rate. Why? Because insurance companies change their rates every year. Well, I'm comfortable with my Blue Cross and my Blue Shield. Yeah, well, Blue Cross and Blue Shield is one of the most expensive health insurances you can have. Be comfortable with it then and pay more money. It's okay. But if you'd like to save money, I like Allstate. I got a nice friend at Allstate. Yeah. Well, why is he so friendly to you? He's making money. Well, I got a nice banker and I get my home. Well, your banker's not your friend. Banks are not your friend. They'll give you 3% on your money so they can turn around and give it to someone, loan it to someone for 19%. Banks are not your friend. Don't get sucked up in a nice personality. Allstate, State Farm, Farm Bureau, they're good companies, and maybe they're the best for you at that year, but one of the ways that you need to take the time, it's hard to take time because nobody wants to take time to do this, is call your insurance company, talk to an independent broker, ask them, can you give me a better deal on my car insurance? Make them go to work. If they don't call the person you have it with, because he's going to give you the same deal. Look for insurance each year and just shop around. I promise that will help you if you do that. F, invest in the right places. What does that mean? Well, some of you ought to look into faith-based investments. I have nothing to do with faith-based investments. I get nothing from them. I don't get a dime. I don't sell faith-based investments. I'm saying it for you, not me. Faith-based investments are investments that are individualized portfolios. They are not mutual funds. They're individualized portfolios that have been vetted to be guaranteed not to support things you don't believe in. So give 10%, save 10%, and look, where can I go to find about faith-based investments? I'm sorry to tell you this, but if you go to your broker, he's going to say, let me look at that, and I'll get right back to you. Edward Jones, Raymond James, Charles Schwab, Morgan Stanley. Go back and ask him. You'll find I'm telling you the truth. They don't care about faith-based investments. Let me educate you real quickly about investment people. If they work for an investment company, they have to promote the line of the investment line. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Like it or not, I'm just telling you, I have nothing else to lose. Edward Jones has been sued three different times for hundreds of millions of dollars. They get paid $98 million a year by one company to promote their investments. Go do your homework. Google it. Yeah, it's not just a Google story. It's real. $98 million. Hey, Edward Jones, here's all the investments in the world, and we want you to push these investments. And if you do, we'll give Edward Jones $98 million. I'm not against Edward Jones. I have friends that work for Edward Jones. Good company. I'm just telling you the truth. It's good for you to know that, isn't it? Because a stockbroker makes money on your stocks, whether they're up or whether they're down. A certified financial planner, which I'm neither one, only makes money when he can get your money to grow. So he is incentivized to make your money grow. A stockbroker, if your money goes down, you signed a piece of paper that future performances may not be indicative of past results, and sorry, but you signed that form. Well, what are you doing with my money? Oh, we'll move it over if you want us to. That's fine. Well, what can you tell me about faith-based investments? Ooh, what was that again? Faith-based investments. Well, I'll come back next week. I'll see what I can come up with. And so I have done this all around America for years. And so when people in the congregation go to their broker and ask them about something like I just said, the broker comes back and says, well, we don't sell those. Or one broker came back and said, well, here's what I found as far as religious investments. And he turned the screen around, showed the Fundamental Independent Bible-Believing Baptist Christian these religious investments. And the guy was a little bit astute, the person I talked to, and he looked at it and he said, well, that says Islamic investments. What's that? Well, that's religious investments. Yeah, but does that have anything to do with the Islamic faith? Oh, yeah, that's investments with the Islamic faith. And that's what a well-known financial advisor shared with someone in the church that went and asked, what do you think about faith-based investments? But if you'd like to know more about that, I can tell you more about it. I don't make a dime. I can't sell it. I wouldn't sell it. I can't take your money. I wouldn't take your money and invest it at all. There's no dog in that hump for me. I'm here to tell you about it so it'll help you. All I can do is deliver the message. So invest in the right places. Move on down. H, understand how money works. Understand how money works. So somewhere along the side of the paper, please write this down. The rule of 72. The rule, R-U-L-E, of 72. How many of you know what the rule of 72 is? Okay, so you need to know. So have you ever wondered how long it takes your money to grow? When you put money in an investment, have you ever thought in your mind, how long is it going to take this to grow? Anybody ever think that? Okay, well, it'd be good if you did. So the rule of 72 is you take a number of the interest rate that you're earning. How much interest rate are you earning? Let's say it's 4%. And you divide the interest rate that you're earning, 4%. Like on a money market in a bank, it used to be 4%. How long will it take my money to double in that bank if I get 4%? Well, 4 into 72 is what number? 72 divided by 4 is 18. So if you get 4% in a money market at a bank, it will take your money 18 years to double. So if I put in $100,000, my money's going to double at 4% in 18 years. If I can get 8% somewhere, 8% into 72 is how many? 9 years. So if I put $100,000 into something and I get 8%, my money's going to double in 9 years. If I can get 10%, 10 into 72 is, it's going to take my money 7.2 years to double. You say, what has this got to do with anything? I think it'd be good for you all to pay attention to where is your money, what's it invested in, and what percentage is it growing? Because that will help you to have a good idea to plan ahead. So when we retire in, how many years are you going to be retired? How many years from now do you want to know? That you'll know how long is it going to take your money to double by using the rule of 72. Okay? One other thing about money is this. A tax-deferred vehicle is a vehicle that you don't have to pay taxes on until you take it out. A vehicle like insurance is tax-deferred, like life insurance or like an annuity, tax-deferred. So if I take a dollar and I don't have to pay taxes, and the next day I have $2, the next day I have $4, it doubles. The next day I have $8, the next day I have $16, the next day I have $32. It just keeps doing that for 20 years, and I don't have to pay taxes on it. At the end of 20 years, I'll have over $1 million. But if I did exactly the same thing, took a dollar, made it $2, $2, $4, $4, and I have to pay average tax, in 20 years, I'll have $51,000. $51,000 because I have to pay taxes on it, or $1 million because I didn't. Same amount of money, one's taxed and one is deferred. So you can grow your money a lot more if you have it in a tax-deferred vehicle. All right, real quickly, I've got to hurry on. All right, so real quickly, let's look at the preservation. Well, no, how money works. Understand compound interest, as we just talked about. Understand compound interest. Number two, invest in the right places, like faith-based investments. Three, minimize taxes by trying to use tax-deferred vehicles. By the way, if you're here and you're a young person, if you have an IRA, we're going to lose some of you right now. Stay with me. If you're a young person and you have an IRA, this money's taken out of your salary and it goes into IRA, you didn't pay taxes on that, and it grows into your IRA. When you get old, you're going to be required to take out the required minimum distribution so you can pay taxes on all that money. That's the government retirement plan. This other retirement plan called an Index Universal Life is that you pay taxes on that premium, and then that money grows and it grows and it grows. And then when you get older, you take the money out over time, and you pay taxes on none of it. One of them, you pay taxes on the seed. The other one, you pay taxes on the harvest. The government IRA is you pay taxes on all the harvests you take out. The Index Universal Life, you pay taxes on the seed. So when it grew to be an orchard and it delivered all those apples, you didn't pay taxes on any of those apples. That's called an Index Universal Life. It's a tax-free retirement income. Tax-free retirement income. Now, don't be negative on this guy, but his name was Walt Disney. Walt Disney started a little company called Disney World, Disneyland, and he used it by putting money in a taxed index, universal life product. There's another guy by the name of J.C. Penney, that back in the day, he took money, put it in life insurance, and when he took it out, he didn't have to pay taxes on it. There's another guy by the name of Rockefeller. Have you ever heard of Rockefeller? Rockefeller put his money in this Index Universal Life, and when he took it out, he didn't have to pay taxes on it. Why? Because what you take out of life insurance is not taxed. stay with me right here for just a second. Let's go to this, the preservation phase, and I'll hit on this. Preservation phase. Learn when to maximize your Social Security. You can take Social Security out when you're 62, like my sister did, and I warned her not to do that. So when she was 72, all she did is complain because she didn't have enough money. Every year that you wait to turn on Social Security will grow by 8% until you turn it on. If you turn it on before your full retirement age, which is around 67 and a half, you will be penalized. If you wait till you're 67 and a half and you turn on Social Security, you won't be penalized. When's the best time to turn on Social Security? Well, the answer is you have to really punch in a few numbers into which we do for you for free, into a computer program, and it'll tell you when's the best time for you to turn on your Social Security. It varies based on people's age, needs, and wants. So maximize your Social Security is very important in preservation phase. B, adjust your investment strategy. Please write this down. Adjust your investment strategy. The older you get, the more safer your money should be. So the rule of 100, how young are you, young lady?
31.
So the rule of 100 means we take the number of her age, 31, and she should have how much of her money in the stock market? 100 minus 31 leaves 69. So a 31-year-old can afford to have her money, 69%, in the stock market, and the other money in a safe place, 31%, so that money is growing on an average 4 to 8% safe money, and the money that she has in the stock market may grow 24%. But she can't afford to lose all the money she has in the stock market, so a good rule of 100, financial principle, is take your age minus 100. How young are you, sir? I forgot. Yes, your husband. 91. So he's a 91-year-old young man. So based on the rule of 100, we take 91 from 100, and that leaves how much? 9. So a 91-year-old man ought to have 91% of his money in a safe place and 9% at risk. Remember what happened in 2008, some of you, when the stock market lost almost 50%? Well, it was good because it happened way back then and you didn't need it or die. But if you were old back in 92, 93, 94, 95, it may have taken you too long to recoup that money. So the rule of 100 is take your age. That's how much you should have in a safe place, somewhere you can get 4 to 8%. And the rest of your money can be at risk because you can afford to lose it because of time. Does that make sense? How many of you have ever heard of the rule of 100? Okay, financial advisors do not like the rule of 100 because it doesn't fit their agenda. By the way, FYI, don't even need to look. Statistically, you may not be like the average church, but the average church has 89% of all the money you have in this world. Every one of you, 89% of your money is in the stock market. Well, that's a good place to put it if you have the time. If you have the risk tolerance. But if you don't have the time, if you don't have the risk tolerance, there are other places to put it. So adjust your investment strategy. C, diversify your portfolio. What does that mean? That means put some of your money, kind of related to the B, put some of your money in a safe place. Life insurance is a good place to put it. We talked about indexed universal life. A fixed indexed annuity is a safe place. There's good, bad, and ugly everything in America. Good and bad and ugly annuities, good and bad and ugly people, but there are some good fixed indexed annuities that will get you 21% the first day you have it. So if someone puts $100,000 in a fixed indexed annuity at 21%, the next day he's got $121,000, and if it grows an average of 8% at the end of the first year, he has almost $130,000 and he only put in $100,000. And that money is locked in and will never go down. It only goes up. It's guaranteed and insured and protected. And no one has ever lost a penny in a fixed indexed annuity today. D, adjust your spending. And we're in the preservation phase. So the older you get, so my wife and I used to eat 3 times a day. Now we're eating twice. We're taking that money and saving it. because we don't have any bills, so we're saving that money and giving it to the Lord's work. So adjust your spending. You don't. When you get older, you won't be spending as much money as you did when you were younger, right? So don't. Your spending should be down. E, even though it's not written there, put E, long-term care plans. The state of Colorado has passed this law, I talked about briefly earlier this morning, about the long-term care partnership plan in Colorado, and that plan says if you buy a long-term care insurance policy that the state of Colorado has endorsed, and you ever use up the benefits that's in that policy, that the state of Colorado cannot take your assets. If you do not have that plan, whatever you all have, young, medium, or old, whatever you have, the state of Colorado, if you need long-term care, if you have a car accident, a stroke, cancer, dementia, and you have to go to an assisted living that costs $45,000 a year, you got to start cashing in your IRAs, your 401s, your savings, your CDs, your stocks, your bonds, sell your property until you only have $2,000 left in your checking account. That's not the worst of it. The worst of it is not only that you just have $2,000, but then the state will put a lien on your house. You can go check all this out. Every word I'm saying is true. They'll put a lien on your house. It's called Medicaid recovery. They cannot take your house as long as you live, but when both husband and wife have passed away, they can sell your house and take all the money that was in that house, your equity that you wanted to leave to your children, and they can spend it, pay back Medicaid. It's a legal term called Medicaid recovery. If you have the long-term care partnership plan, they can't do that. So my people suffer for lack of knowledge. Well, how can I know? Let someone teach me. That's why Brother Steve is here, because I want to help you. If I talk to you, at least you'll know about it, know what to do about it. So I'm trying to help you. I can guarantee you with a church this size, there's somebody in this church that has a little bit of money that's going to end up in a nursing home, and they're going to spend their money. The worst thing about long-term care is once you spent all your money and they put you on Medicaid, and if people in the nursing home find out you're on Medicaid, that means that the nursing home only is getting about $42,000 a year for you because you're on Medicaid, but everybody else in the nursing home is private pay or they have long-term care insurance. So guess who they have a tendency to take better care of? They take better care of whoever's getting they're getting paid. How do I know this? Because I've lived it. I told you this morning, my wife's sister died in a nursing home after she went to the nursing home because of a back problem she could never heal, and she got heavier and heavier because she couldn't walk. And it'd take them sometimes 6 to 8 hours to change her diaper. She had to lay in her, you got the message, right? 8 hours. Why did they do that? Because they were only getting to that nursing home $38,000 for her. So they quit taking care of her, and guess what happened? She died with bed sores. I'm just trying to help you. I know this sounds negative. Stay with me. Okay, now let's go to the distribution phase. Make sure you have a will. If I had you raise your hand, you'd be surprised how many people would raise their hand and say, we don't have a will. Would you please, in the name of the Lord Jesus, get you a will. Here's the phone number. Will you call the Christian Law Association? Ready? Here it is. 888-252-1969. All you have to do is call the Christian Law Association, 888-252-1969, say, hey, I understand that you'll give me a will for $300. Will you do that? Yes, they'll do that for you. Now, for $100 more, which I have nothing to do with this, they'll set up a durable power of attorney and a health care power of attorney. Well, what's that? A durable power of attorney means that if you put on oxygen or you're unconscious and they have you plugged into a machine and bills come due in your house, the person who's in charge of your durable power of attorney can have access to your funds and pay your bills. It's got to be someone you trust. The healthcare power of attorney is the person that unplugs the machine. So the Christian Law Association, if you're in full-time Christian work, will give this all to you for free. So why would you not call them? If you're not in full-time Christian work, they'll set up for $300. Now, the Christian Law Association says if you have their will, you probably don't need a trust. So can I talk about trust real quick? B, set up a trust. Distribution, make a will, set up a trust. Okay, so let's talk about a trust real quick. What's a trust? A trust is like a garage in which you park whatever you want to park. Financial vehicles, your house, your car, property, a business, IRAs, 401s, savings, CDs, stocks, bonds, whatever you have. You can put it in a trust. What's kind of a good rule of thumb to whether you're going to need a trust? Well, lawyers have taught me the answer is $250,000. So if you have $250,000, excluding your house, in IRAs, 401s, liquid assets, that's everything you have besides a house, you probably ought to need to be thinking about a trust. Why is that? A will is good for you when you die. A trust helps you when you live. Now, there is something called a pour-over will, which if you have a will, you can pour. It's called a pour-over. You pour that over into the trust, and everything's nice and clean and green. Why is that important? A trust avoids probate. You don't know what probate is. Probate is a law in the state of Colorado that says if you die and you don't have your money in an IRA or an insurance product or in a trust, that it's got to go through probate, like your checking account, your savings account, stuff you own, car, land, house, whatever. So what the state does, if you don't have it protected against probate, which is qualified money like an IRA, 401, insurance products, trust, that they can take your things and they go through everything and see, okay, they had this credit card, that credit card, they had this mortgage. Let's see, what liens are owed, what property is due, what taxes are due. And they put this, and it takes a year and a half to go through probate. It takes a year and a half, and it's public knowledge. If you all would like to see what some people have in Greeley, Colorado, tomorrow you can go to the library here in Greeley, Colorado, and see whose stuff is going through probate. I can't believe Betty Lou and Uncle John had that much money. You can go down and read it. It's public knowledge. But if you protect against probate, no one can know what you have. So probate is simply a legal process that the state makes sure all your bills and pays, taxes are paid, and liens are paid. And to avoid that, you need to have a trust. Not to get too deep here, but there's a revocable trust, which is the good one, that you can change. And then there's one that if you're really, really wealthy, and you might want to have an irrevocable trust. An irrevocable trust costs about $20,000 for a lawyer to set up, and once you put anything in there, you no longer own it. The trust does. You can't change it. It's irrevocable. Some very, very, very wealthy people have irrevocable trust. I would encourage you not to have an irrevocable trust unless you're way up there. Okay, so irrevocable, revocable, the will. Okay, so just a word about the will. This is very practical, and we're just about done. What I'm about to tell you is very important for those of you that are at least in the preservation phase. I hope you write this down. I would encourage all of you, if you have a daughter or a son, is to take them off of your house and your bank account and change that to transfer on death. It's called TOD. Do not put your children on your bank account or checking account. Well, I'm getting older. My husband died, and I have a daughter, and I trust her, or I'm going to put her name on my house so my daughter owns the house and I own the house. Stay with me as I explain this briefly. If you know of anyone that does that, I'm not saying it's the worst thing in the world, but if you pass away and you and your husband bought the house at $150,000 and now the house is worth $300,000 and you put the name of somebody on there as the co-owner of that house, when you die, they got to pay what's called the step-up clause. It's a legal term. That means they're going to have to pay taxes between $150,000 what you bought it for and what they sold it for. You have to pay all those taxes. But if you just put on there TOD, transfer on death, they won't have to pay those taxes because they'll just be transferred at the value at that time. So look up, if you would, transfer on death. What I just referred to there was a phrase called step-up basis. So the step-up basis is a legal term that means that whatever you have, like an IRA, a house, and if you put someone's name on it, and you die, they're going to have to pay the tax difference called a step-up basis. We don't want to do that if we don't have to. Please write this down somewhere, if you would. If you own a house with a spouse, make sure it says joint right of survivorship. Joint right of survivorship will protect it so that when your spouse passes away, if you have a son or daughter that got married and your spouse dies, your son or daughter who got married, spouse, won't be able to put pressure on your son or daughter to make you sell the house so they can get the will, the part of the money of the sale of the house. It's a legal thing called joint right of survivorship. Please make sure your house is has that in there. Real quickly, and I'm just about done, on a will that you have, you're going to get if you don't have a will, please write this phrase down. Disposition of personal tangible assets. Disposition, this is a document, of personal tangible assets. I'll tell you a quick story and I'll tell you why you need to have that. Remember I told you my mom died. My mom, great-great-grandmother, had some very, very handmade little teapots. These things were probably 150 years old, 200 years old from England. My mother promised my sister that my sister would get this very expensive, exquisite, beautiful collector's item antiques. My sister all her life was looking forward to getting that. My daddy died about 40 years ago, and my mama married a gentleman about 12 years or something after that. Now, he was younger, so she married a younger guy, and he had a daughter. Well, they were married for 26 years, and then my mom dies. My mom was an antique dealer, small time. She had three or four antique shops. So at the last minute, her new husband, married for 24 years, it wasn't my dad, talked my mother, who had cancer, to changing the durable power of attorney and healthcare power of attorney to him from my son, who's a certified financial planner. So in her right mind, she changed the durable power of attorney to this man, who I love. His name is Dee. He's in a nursing home this moment, 87 years old in Kansas. So anyway, my mom has this cancer because he got her to change it. She didn't write it down in the will that she was changing it. There's no way we can prove it that he wasn't. The last 2 weeks of her life, even though she spent thousands of dollars for long-term care insurance, he would not let her go to the nursing home. So my two nieces would come in and take care of my mom. I live in South Carolina. She lives in Kansas. And so he said that we're going to go by what this nurse says. And this nurse said, just give my mom morphine. So the last 2 weeks of my mom's life, she had nothing to drink or nothing to eat but shots of morphine. And it was killing her. And it was all legal. And he was the durable power of attorney. But his daughter was going around to the antique shops selling my mom's antiques and putting them on eBay. Then my mama died. My mom had a lot of nice jewelry. My mom had money. And this woman, my father-in-law's daughter, took the jewelry, went with her dad to the bank. They drilled a hole in the safe deposit box and took my mom's jewelry and sold it. The teapot? Well, we don't know where it went, but I got a good idea. So they killed my mom. She was going to pass away anyway. She's full of cancer. But they expedited that because he didn't have it written down. I love you. I'm trying to help you. This stuff happens. I know you all have wonderful children, but I'm telling you, if you don't have it written down, there's lawsuits and there's all kinds of issues that go on among family. And this statement, durable disposition of personal tangible assets, if my mom would have written that down and what jewelry she wanted to go, I have a brother, I have a sister, to us three kids, we would have gotten that stuff. Not that we needed the stuff, but it would have kept in the family instead of being sold on eBay by some thief who legally could get away with it. So I am telling you this stuff. I know that this has been boring. It's long. It's arduous to have to sit here and listen to all this. I understand that. I feel your pain of sitting here all this time. But I'm telling you, if you consider what I say, may the Lord give you wisdom, I promise you that your family would be blessed by you being able to set things up properly like this. And if you have a trust, you can set up a charitable trust to go to your church, a mission board, and you can make sure the right children get what? A disposition of a tangible personal asset means that this gun goes to this son, this jewelry goes to that daughter, this necklace goes to that one, and the children, your children, have spouses, will not be able to fight because it's in the will, it's in the trust, written black and white. They can't fight it. My mom didn't have it, and all that stuff's gone by. I'm just trying to help you. I hope something I've said today would be a blessing. Anybody have any quick questions you want to ask me before we turn back the pastor and 15 minutes overboard? Sorry. This is all legal stuff, and I'm just trying to help you. I hope you're not mad at me. I love you. So, all right. Well,